Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says, in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And welcome to the Business of the Business podcast. I am your co-host, JP John Paz from the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me is my co-host, Mr. Trump Manny himself, the wizard, Mr. Lavi Margolin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I think we're on a wonderful streak here on episode 107. As you know, John, the wrestling world, all everyone was talking about the last couple of weeks was Australia, Starcast, you know, what's going on, big news going on. So of course we reached out right away to one of the main people putting that together, Cameron Bell of Oceania Pro Wrestling. I hope I didn't butcher the name too bad, but Cam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, pleasure to be here. And no, you did pretty well. Generally go with Vale, but all good. And certainly Cam. I'm only Cameron when I'm at passport control or in serious trouble with the with Mrs. Vale. So all good.
Wonderful. So I'm going to turn over to John to learn a little bit more, and then I'll be back to talk business.
What part of Australia are you in?
So Melbourne, in Victoria. So that's in the south of Australia. We're obviously a big country, continent, landmass wise. Not that many people really, but yeah, Melbourne's home base for me.
Because my sister actually and my brother-in-law, they live in Cloverleaf Beach, I think it's called. It's close to Sydney. I don't know if you're familiar.
Certainly familiar with Sydney, but not Clove. What was it, Cloverleaf Beach? But Melbourne and Sydney have that healthy New York, Los Angeles style rivalry.
Yeah, but she's moving back in a few weeks. She's moving back to the States, so I don't know. But she loved. I mean, she lived in Australia for 10 years, so I mean, obviously she loved it out there.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. Great country. Obviously, we're a fair way away, but. And that's why it's important to get really good wrestling events as you'll probably appreciate, a pretty rabid, passionate market for wrestling here in Australia and New Zealand. So Oceania is the continental, often using those sort of Olympic circles name for the region itself, with all the little islands as well that have produced so many wrestlers, right? Out of Tonga and Samoa, Fiji. So it's a pretty good region to hold wrestling events.
So were you always a big wrestling fan? Like, what about wrestling kind of attracted you to it all the way out there in Australia?
Yeah, well, without giving away my age too much, although it's probably obvious, but certainly the Hogan Andre, that's my first recollection of being a fan and being interested in the industry. And it's really continued throughout, my life, my two younger brothers, my kids. So I've always had that interest. Probably I had my moments where I've, not followed it as closely, but generally followed it really closely. And probably about 10 years ago, I got to meet the people at TNA when I was working with football club here called North Melbourne Football Club. So Australian football is the biggest sport in Australia. North Melbourne Football Club is one of those clubs. We just staved off relocation, and I was really keen to go to the US and meet with sports and entities that were, not the biggest player in the market, but were, how they were building their business model and the like. So TNA were great. Mike Weber, that, a lot of wrestling people would know, I think he's been on this podcast, who's now with Fight TV. I got to meet at that time and a range of other people. And it's I suppose the business connection started, 10, 11 years ago. And then the journey as, followed wrestling was when I left my last role as CEO at Baseball Australia, took time out and slowly just thought, I wouldn't mind following my passion and seeing if the, passion and my, 20 years of experience would merge and be able to create something. So, from that point, it's really just evolved almost organically and connecting with different federations and different people. I've been very lucky with some of the people I've met. And probably the other thing was, taking more of an interest in Australian wrestling. And there's some great brands down here that I wasn't aware of as a fan. And, so it's all sort of just merged from the Hogan Andre to the, following it throughout to certainly the meeting with TNA and Mike in 2011. And the wrestlers did some promotions for my football club so that we could put it out to our membership base. And from there, the business journey slowly started and accelerated in the last 12 months.
With the football club and wrestling, is there some correlation there? Is there some like synergy, you think, with that?
Well, I think, it's a good question. So I think there's a lot of synergies wrestling is a sporting product. And when we talk the business of sport in particular, I've been heavily influenced by the roles in football clubs and certainly at Hockey Australia, so field hockey here, an Olympic sport, and then Baseball Australia, that, again, you're trying to build business models, and particularly when it's sports that are, let's call it niche or emerging, you're trying to find ways forward that build a successful model, support the athletes, build a fan base, all those sort of things. So for me, the wrestling journey that I'm on and we've been thinking about, I think there's a lot of synergies. And the best one I can probably give at the moment is in Baseball Australia, we rebuilt our Australian Baseball League. And, the league, which is a 10-week season through December and January into a little bit of February, is effectively an off-season league. And we leveraged Major League Baseball. So we had Major League Baseball sending clubs down to our Winter League. We have the three big leagues in Asia doing the same thing. And at the same time, that helped elevate our league to get a broadcast deal. It helped elevate our Australian baseball players to play in a real purpose-built domestic competition. So I've taken a bit of a mindset like that in with this project and some other things hopefully in the future, is that it's a great chance to build and grow Australian wrestling. Linking it to international and particularly to the US is really important for credibility, for commercial reasons. And again, being, I don't want to say a feeder system, but certainly being a point midway that is good for Australian wrestling and should be good for the international brands. I mean, it's very difficult. Again, back to the baseball analogy, Major League Baseball played in Sydney in 2014. It's a huge event, but, went really well. Incredibly expensive, incredibly difficult. To do, it's not going to happen too often. Synergies here, WWE have toured, did a great event, Melbourne Cricket Ground in 2018, I think it was, 2019. So for the other brands that are growing really well, like AEW or Impact, New Japan, whoever it might be, I think there are ways to do it in Australia that, again, build off what we've got here. It doesn't need to be necessarily a pay-per-view model. And that's you know, pay-per-view event type model. But the fan base want to see those brands and that talent here. So hopefully this Australian Starcast event will be the first of many that really do show a business model that is fit for purpose. I think that's the real key. So to answer your question, it is absolutely the links from my background in sport. Again, we know what the end product is, but in a lot of ways, the end product, because it is also involves an entertainment creative component, actually makes it a stronger business model at times than a baseball or a hockey or an Australian football. It's a very fixed and structured, and you have to play within certain limitations. So this is a great space, I think, to use the best of the industry locally and internationally to create something really significant.
Obviously, Starcast, that's a huge reason why you're on with us today. We wanted to talk. How did you actually connect with Conrad Thompson? Was that through Mike Weber? Like, how did this actual process get started?
Yeah, so in the last 12 months, as I'd sort of started to reach out to different contacts and did some cold calling and, played up who I was and, an Australian looking to do something. I found every federation's been really, a promotion has been good to have an initial contact with. So I've been talking with the NWA guys and as well, which obviously Nick Aldis has been part of. And I got to meet Nick at, so we'd been communicating, if you like, on email and the like, and we got to meet in person in Knoxville. And he's been the real probably key for me because he's a really prominent athlete, great career, great success, but has a tremendous mind as well for the business. And I'm bringing a lot of experience from my side of things, but in sport and in Australia. And as much as I'm a fan, I don't have that inside business of wrestling knowledge. And so we connected. We then really started to accelerate. Well, what could we do? Sort of a really, I think there's a lot of good synergies between Nick and I, and obviously Nick's connection to Mickey, and then through that it led to a chat with an introduction with Conrad. And so I didn't know Conrad. Obviously I knew who he was and what he'd been doing, and again we sort of clicked really quickly in some virtual meetings, and I think we all agreed that there was a great synergies in what we were collaborating to do. And what really struck me with all of them is the fact that they see this as something that's sustainable. It's not just a one-off type, let's see what we can do and sort of be done with it. And whatever that means in the future, that doesn't mean Starcast will be in Australia forever, but it does mean that we can build something that Australian fans and New Zealand fans and fans in Oceania can really get behind on a permanent basis. So, yeah, that's how it all came about, really through just different connections, meeting Nick, really connecting with him. He was very gracious with his time, and we've grown from there.
How big is the fan base there? Because obviously, WWE had a stadium show not that long ago. Yeah. I think it was 4 years ago. But how really expansive is the fan base down there?
Yeah, so clearly WWE has is the brand that all Australians would associate with who have any sort of level of interest in wrestling, whether they're a fan, a casual fan, or people that are, aware of obviously the superstars and that WWE brand. And I think, I give them all credit too. I mean, they're an international sporting brand that, is as big and bold as any out there. So from that level, and without getting too in the weeds of it, we've certainly got really good data on the level of interest around all the other brands that are in wrestling, from AEW through to New Japan, Impact, TNA, et cetera. And a lot of that can be sort of collaborated from different things that are out there, particularly with social media. So the fan base is quite strong. I think most wrestling brands would say, without being too broad, is that Australia's in their top 3 to 4 international fan bases. So ourselves, the UK, Japan, and probably Canada are the big four that seem to, really support all wrestling brands, and therefore, and all of them have had touch points here that have led to some awareness. The other key part, though, is that the Australian wrestling scene is, I think, heavily, heavily underestimated in how good it is. There's a lot of, like in the US or the UK, there's certainly a lot of promotions, and but you know, there's some really, really strong brands here that are developing good wrestlers, and we're seeing that with the talent that's emerging, you know, on the big international brands, you know, Rhea Ripley, Toni Storm, Buddy Matthews, you know, so there's plenty, and that's only just three of probably you know 10 to 12 that are in the big promotions at the moment. So the reach here and the interest is really high. When the brands tour here, it tends to be, you know, you see really good outcomes at times at venues that are, you know, not the best venues in the world, but the demand and the interest is really high. New Japan toured here, I think, in 2016 to great success. So I think the challenge is, what's the business model that can satisfy an Australian fan base and grow it if you're an international federation promotion? And at the same time, recognizing, well, it is a fair distance to travel, the cost limitations and challenges that can come in with that. But the fan base here, you know, again, has been proven time and time again, particularly with the big WWE shows, that the interest is really high. And the market here is really strong from a local perspective through to the fan base and all the brands that they follow.
I'll hand it over to Lavi. I know he's got a bunch of good questions for you.
Great. Thanks so much. So I recently enjoyed, I think it was Conrad had shared an image, Starcast Australia, of course, with a kangaroo on it. It was a nice image. Something interesting that I noticed about the press release, of course, it, I believe, referenced Starcast, but it wasn't sort of putting Starcast necessarily at the forefront. Is there still a little bit of, branding going on that, you know, you want to make sure that Oceania comes across as its own brand in collaboration with Starcast? How do those things interplay with this upcoming event?
Yeah, definitely. So certainly the using the brand of Starcast and hopefully, you know, it being a true Starcast event is really the best way to launch in this market, because it has an appeal to both the wrestling fans and some of the corporate partners and destinations and cities that we're talking to, because it's an established event, it has that established history. So, you know, Starcast Australia is more than the working title. That's certainly what we're looking at. From the Oceania Pro Wrestling brand, that is, you know, my brand, if you like, my business model, that will look to collaborate as the Australian promotional arm, if you like, to work in with obviously Conrad, Mickey, and Nick. So where OPW or the Oceania Pro Wrestling brand goes, will, you know, I've got some views and certainly some themes and strategic plans of where I want it to go. But initially, it's really to generate, you know, that interest locally to go, you know, this is the Australian promoting arm of this particular event. Some other things I'll announce probably in the next week or two will hopefully won't confuse things, but will show that, you know, from my perspective, I'm looking to work with a range of different international partners. You know, dare I say it, be the Switzerland of wrestling, you know, where I'll work with every, you know, interested group, both locally and internationally. So really, yeah, and I think if the event stays permanently, there's a permanent event in Australia, it won't necessarily be Starcast Australia. It'll be, you know, linked to a unique brand here, but still follows the strong themes and success of Starcast, which is, you know, that fan engagement, that broader wrestling community and activities and the legends, and of course that wrestling content. And again, I think maybe that little point of difference will be, you know, as I said, I'm really looking to elevate wherever possible Australian wrestling, New Zealand wrestling, and that's where that Oceania brand comes in. I want it to capture this region. Obviously, Australia's the big country in this region, but as I said, the brand of the island nations and New Zealand as well is really important. So it's essentially giving it an Australian base and home, so that not everyone's also running to Conrad and Starcast, but blending it in with the brand of Starcast. And, you know, what brand we end up with, we'll start putting out some different things over the next month or two to, you know, get fan interest. But it's got to have an Australian feel to it. And maybe the name that ends up, you know, capturing what happens next at the end of next year may be a blend of where it's based, Australia and Starcast. So we may have something a little bit unique and different.
Great. Also, I was reading that the exact location isn't yet determined, that there's different regions that are being looked at. Is this not only logistical consideration, but perhaps by putting it out now, you might see maybe there's some tourism divisions, other promoters or venues that will want to collaborate, sort of like getting the word out to see what comes back to you, in addition to like being proactive in visiting sites?
Yeah, definitely. So it's very much with a commercial lens to, you know, securing the best possible partnership on where the event will be held. Sydney and Melbourne are the, you know, the two big cities, probably with Brisbane, obviously with the Brisbane Olympics. You know, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane are the three big cities in Australia. But around that are a range of what we would call, you know, regional, but they're, you know, very big cities and states even that are very interested in this sort of international content that involves economic activity through people visiting that city, promotion of the city and its tourism assets and other key things. Securing events on an annual basis. So Australia is a big, big sporting market, and a lot of our event focus is on that appointment of you, is what we would say. So, you know, that we have major, you know, football codes and motor racing and horse racing. Horse racing is a great example where, you know, our biggest event, the Melbourne Cup, is on the second Tuesday. Sorry, it's on the first Tuesday of November each year. It's an iconic event. Over 100 years it's been run. And so Australia has a strong event model to have events secured, locked in, and try to be held at the same time or similar time each year. So going out now is about generating the interest. I've already had a lot of interest before we even went public, when I was able to use my network to talk to different cities and states. That's increased since the announcement. And so we're really looking to, you know, secure the best possible partnership and deal based on the location, the venue, the commercial returns, and how that can be structured to again have an event that's permanently on the calendar. We have a lot of, you know, our National Basketball League here, which you know, literally all of those potential venues would be in play, and a bit like the US, again from a landmass perspective, Australia is a big country, so. Working, you know, we have a tremendous airline network here, and so Australians are very much used to traveling to events as well and making a weekend of it. And I think that's really important in this, is that it's a wrestling event, but it's got everything else around it that, again, people see it as that iconic event to go to. Motor racing has a great event recently held called Bathurst, and that's a really, you know, small regional area, but it's... you know, for our motor racing V8s, it's a massive annual event that generates huge exposure because, again, it's become iconic. It's become familiar to the fans, not just of the sport, but of people that have a casual interest in, say, a motorsport or a racing. I think that's what Australia's really lacked, that wrestling event that it's not just for the, you know, the hardcore fans and the people that follow it in and out, but there's so many casual fans. And back to the question around WWE and where this can be, the market is big enough that I think there's a lot of fans here that follow WWE but maybe don't know enough about the other international brands and the other Australian wrestling brands. And an event like this can hopefully shine a real spotlight on both of those.
And in terms of learning about the wrestling scene, one of our contacts runs WrestleMap.com. So that's a wonderful resource for learning about international wrestling. But sort of to paint a flavor of the Australian wrestling scene, are there certain stars that have emerged that sort of tour all around the country and the region? Do the promoters work together? You know, sometimes There's jokes in American wrestling that one calls the commission to say that they don't have the proper license and, you know, tries to hold them up. So, like, what's the flavor of what's going on over there?
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a mix. And you know, I'm probably still on a learning curve over the last 12 months. But from we have, there'd be a dozen really good, what we would call local regional promotions across Australia and all parts of the country that are typically running shows on a monthly basis, maybe a fraction longer, maybe it's, you know, 10 shows over 12 months. And most of the talent here that is based in Australia would largely be free to participate across the board at different promotions. Some may not. And as they protect their brand or their character or whatever they might be doing, maybe restricted in who they compete with. And the other big challenge for the really good core of talent here is they're balancing, you know, that passion and their professionalism to succeed in professional wrestling with working life and you know, call it the day-to-day job. So so it's a very it's certainly more collaborative than not. I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, certain wrestling brands here that maybe don't want to work with another one, or there's clashes, and like anything, it's a, you know, if you're running it, you're running it as a business, so you're really trying to protect your business. But I've certainly seen some really good collaboration, Melbourne City Wrestling, and which is Melbourne, and Pro Wrestling Australia, which is in Sydney, collaborated on an event, which was probably one of the catalysts for me to go, wow, this is, you know, there's some great opportunities here. The wrestling promotions also in Adelaide and Perth have consistently worked in with different brands, again, on the east coast of Australia. So there is probably more collaboration than not, but like anything, there's, you know, I'm sure there's different tensions. And again, if back to, you know, the really good question about my sporting background previously, it's very similar again to a baseball or a hockey, where, you know, certain groups work well together, some don't, and that's just part of the business mix. I think for the talent here, you know, I've got enormous respect for, you know, what people are doing here. So the wrestler we featured in the newspaper article, which I'm not sure if you're all aware, but the article that launched this was in the Herald Sun in Melbourne, which is our biggest newspaper in the country, and it was on page 5. So it's on the front part. It's you know, it's quite, you know, quite significant to get that mainstream piece. So the wrestler Slex, who was used, you know, has had contracted with Ring of Honor previously. He's competed in Japan. He's one of those talents to me that is, you know, largely working with maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4 different brands. He's not, you know, he's got the certain promotions he works with. He's clearly of an international standard. Another wrestler, Adam Brooks, who's just gone to the US as well. These guys and girls are clearly, to me, at an international standard. And I think maybe we get a bit forgotten about, dare I say it, down under in, you know, there's a lot of wrestling promotions internationally, and maybe, you know, it is hard to follow them all. So I think, it's the talent is here. There's some really good operatives in the brands and the promotions that are, you know, doing it really, you know, tough as far as getting venues and building business models. So, you know, I think the scene here in the industry has been good, but it's been not fragmented, but it's certainly spread across the country. And that can be challenging for wrestlers and fans to be able to, you know, follow more than, you know, a handful of wrestling promotions at any one time.
So you had discussed before New Japan's efforts, Tamashii, in Australia. And, you know, keeping in mind that ideally, it sounds like they'd be a partner or collaborator. But when John and I speak about sort of their efforts in the U.S., it can be a mixed bag in terms of before AEW, a big show could do very, very well, whether it was collaboration with Ring of Honor or alone. Following that, especially in conjunction with the New Japan strong brand, sometimes there's confusion in the market. Like, what am I coming to watch? Is this the A show? Is this a US-based show? But I feel like the branding in Australia has been better. There's been deeper roots there. It's clear what it is. What's your impression of their efforts thus far?
Yeah, look, I think New Japan is, again, a tremendously successful promotion. I know wrestling fans, I think generally, you know, the majority really appreciate how good and successful they are. The Tamashii brand, I think, is huge potential success in this market. The people behind it, who I've also got to meet, have the right intentions. They want to see the market grow here. Tox Farley, who runs the Farley Dojo in Auckland, is one of those, you know, really genuinely good people who's got great interest for the sport here. And I think we're lucky to have people like that that can try to grow the sport in this country. I think Australia, again, can be unique in how we do things in that, again, there will always be some competitive tension. That's just inevitable, and egos and whatever else. But the more collaboration in this market, I think the stronger we will be, as opposed to, you know, the standalone, you know, Mexico, big country, you know, two really, really strong brands. That's, you know, could that be Australia? Maybe, maybe not. I think, again, we're a dynamic and quite versatile market here. So I think what New Japan are looking to do, and what Tamashii represents, is a huge asset to this region. I think it's and it's certainly, you know, a group that I would like to work with as well.
So thinking ahead, maybe 3 years down the road, would the ideal be having this annual, or maybe in such a big region, maybe quarterly events, depending on where they are, regular tours coming in and out that you're coordinating and collaborating with? Is the end result also to have a full-time or near full-time domestic promotion that benefits from the growth of wrestling in the region?
Look, it's an excellent question, and I'm going to use some of my media training from other sports to partially deflect, but I'll try to give you an answer. I certainly said I'm going with this as a view that we can do something sustainable. So without taking my eye off the ball, I think, you know, making sure that the annual event and maybe an event or two we do before that to lead in a really successful next year. So let's call it, you know, 2023, that 1 to 2 events, but particularly the benchmark event with Starcast Australia is successful and shows the path forward for that event to be sustainable and for other things to emerge from that. So where and what that could lead to, yeah, I pretty much have an open-ended approach to it. I think growth in this market is like it's well overdue. As I said, we legitimately punch above our weight with our wrestling talent, our wrestling promotions here. We're a very sophisticated sporting market. So, you know, I really do hope it's the catalyst for a lot of growth. I certainly have some views that I would like to do moving forward. But again, I don't want to jump ahead too far. This might be a podcast to put into the diary in 6 months or so. But there are a lot of opportunities that I think could spin off from this. And, you know, I don't think I'll be, well, you never know. I don't think we'll be invading AEW and Forbidden Door, you know, down under type approach. But at the same time, I really do hope the international brands see the potential here. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to collaborate on what that could be. And, you know, talent moving into their systems, talent coming out of their systems and moving into this market as well. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I've played, you know, I'm very passionate about where Australian wrestling can be, but I'm well aware internationally, US, UK, Mexico, Japan, Canada, that, you know, some really good talent that, you know, if they're not getting enough opportunities, you know, what Australia could be. I go back to that baseball model. We had great success where we had Major League Baseball teams, you know, sending players to Australia that are maybe, you know, obviously in the minor leagues, you know, they're sort of, you know, a step or two away from being major league players. They come to Australia, it rounds off their development, it allows them to go back and play major league baseball. I don't see, you know, if I was going to share one really key strategic insight, I don't see why the international brands wouldn't look at Australia, OPW, Tamashii, whatever it might be, to really strengthen what they can do here, while at the same time, you know, developing their own talent, their own roster, by using that international experience. I mean, this can be a very creative market, almost risk-free, high return. Doesn't work. No one's dropped, you know, $10 million to go and set up an Australian promotion. But if they take a creative lens to, you know, again, I see wrestling exactly like the sporting model. And this is probably, whether I'm a bit naive or not, you know, I'm applying what I've done successfully in other sports to what could be done here. But for me, the starting point is certainly the initial event. But yeah, 3, 4, 5 years time, I see a lot of opportunity, or almost nothing that's off the table.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Let me turn it over to John.
So give us one last big push for StarCast where everybody can find it. And obviously, you know, give everybody the big push to the social medias as well.
Yeah. So definitely the central point, back to one of those earlier questions so that we can get everything, is OceaniaProWrestling.com. That's the really key piece where we want people to subscribe. We want people to follow us on social media. That'll connect everyone through Conrad, Mickey, and Nick. So OceaniaProWrestling.com is the real focus. And rest assured, there'll be we've got a decent lead in coming up, but there's going to be a lot of good announcements and news that are going to follow throughout, and things will move relatively quickly as well. So that's where people need to be. And if you're in, you know, if you're Australian or international wrestling, I'm a relatively easy person to find and reach out to. And so if you're interested, you know, reach out. I'm keen to collaborate where possible. I've already had some, you know, tremendous people reach out that I wasn't aware of. And, you know, I'm the sports business guy. I know how to run sport in this country and I know how to do it really well, but I'm very open to my learning of the wrestling industry and from the business side and how we develop moving forward.
Awesome. Well, Cam, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cam. All right, Lobby, let's get to the news. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about GCW. What is the latest on them? Because they got a bunch of shows coming up here.
Yeah, so it kind of felt like they were getting into a rhythm of, you know, different cities and so on, and a little bit quiet in terms of new announcements, but we knew it wouldn't be quiet for long. So firstly, GCW is coming to Canada. So both in Montreal and Toronto, a collaboration with, IWS? I might be messing this up. In Montreal, the longtime hardcore promotion that has television in the market. From what I see here in terms of the information, I know Montreal and Toronto aren't that close to each other. They're hours away. But I would think, like, you know, once you cross the border, maybe you'll stay and do the show the next day. But the shows are actually 11 days apart. Montreal, the 11th, and Toronto, the 19th. Toronto, we know, you know, it's held WrestleMania. It's a huge wrestling city. Montreal, though, if you find the right talent, especially Quebecois, right, a French-Canadian, they will support, you know, wrestling like crazy. So I think, you know, they're working with an on-the-ground promoter. I think there'll be some excitement for this versus series that they'll have, and then they can grow out from there. So I think that's a long time coming. They'll be returning as well to Charlotte on January 20th. They're doing the Alabama run. Huntsville on January 21st and Florence, Alabama on January 22nd. Again, with New South and another local promoter, which is always a good idea. Returning to New York, Queens, New York, the Melrose Ballroom, March 17th, as we've talked about with Brett. This year, at least the beginning of 2023, won't be the time to return to the Hammerstein yet. So, a good venue to return to. And as we know, they have multiple dates in Atlantic City. So following the December 31st and January 1st shows, March 4th and 5th, they'll be back. Just a brief look at some of the recent ticket sales, you know, in Wasted Time show on December 13th, as they referred to it in Kentuckiana. The sales picked up in this small venue later that there was just general admission available. LA, as we've talked about, has been a great market, very profitable from them, from what we understand, even if they didn't sell out. But things are picking up, of course, for America's Most Wanted with high profile talents on the show. So the fifth row ringside just has limited tickets left, as well as general admission, excuse me. Then in Atlantic City, things are slow at the moment. For the 31st and January 1st, the second row ringside is still available. But as we've talked about in the past, they're GCW, usually their ticket sales pick up late. So you really have to look at the end, not just the initial days.
When you were looking at GCW, is Alabama, is that like a big wrestling hub? I mean, obviously, I know Connie is from there, but I mean, otherwise, like as far as live shows,
it's not typically thought of, but I think quietly they've had consistent shows. Like even, you know, the Armstrongs, I know this feels a little bit dated, but the Bullet Bob, who had passed away a number of years ago, even into his late 60s, early 70s, you know, he was hitting that circuit. So it's a market that, in a small to mid-sized level, it's always had pro wrestling. It has a rich history there. So especially with Conrad being from the area, I think they'll do well on this small scale. It's not, you know, the venues, as I understand them, they're not too ambitious. So it's good to get started that way. And if I would imagine that the main point right now is providing content for Fight Plus. So, you know, Brett has talked about that everything's important when you're a company of that size, but I think it'll be a good move for them.
When you look at GCW right now, it seems like there's no slowing down, right? I mean, they just seem to be dominating right now.
Yeah, they have, you know, I'm not sure where I'm getting this number, but the expectation is around 75 shows a year. You know, they have their, what is it, around eight in Atlantic City, a little bit less, you know, because they do the double shots, probably a little bit less in LA, because that double shot they ran once, which didn't seem to go great, if my mind serves correctly, if my memory serves correctly. But, you know, they always have that LA, so they have their markets, but I think it's a good idea to go and try both, you know, internationally, crossing the border into Canada. It's a great idea. Also, some of the markets, especially the first time that you hit a market with a decent number of wrestling fans, people have been hearing about GCW for a while. I think they would do well, a little bit much to bring that up in our conversation at the beginning of the show. But, you know, if they worked with a promoter in Australia and it made sense, I think they would even do well there just because there's a certain buzz about things.
So what's going on with Fight? I know there's always news about Fight. What's the latest?
Yeah, so a little bit historical, a little bit current as well. So one of the things that we talked about last year was the sale of Fight to Triller, right? When Fight was incorporated under Flips Media Inc., which was their original streaming name as well. So at that time, it was a little bit unclear, you know, what that sold for. But now that they're planning to go public instead of a reverse merger public, there's a number that was in a prospectus that came out. So the purchase consisted of cash considerations of $27.7 million, equity consideration of $16.8 million, and warrants with a total fill value of $6.9 million. So that purchase of all of the money that Triller's spending seems to have been a good idea, because Triller's app, this is from a recent article, represented a small portion of the company's overall revenue in 2021, according to SeaChange's filing of the company's $62.8 million in revenues. 97.6% came from its B2B business, business to business, which they consider companies like Thuzio, which of course works with Starcast as well as Fight TV, versus its B2C business, business to consumer, like its video app, right? Like we've talked about on the show, like, you know, they do stuff like TikTok, like, right now, like that seems to be the main thing they promote sometimes, like this is what we do, but no one really knows them for that. So it pans out in business sense too. However, and this is why I always put on the radar, yes, Fight is apparently doing very well for them, and if there was ever a problem, probably could fight could be broken off to somewhere someone else. Not saying that that's in the works or that would ever happen, but the company overall isn't in a great position. We'll see once they go public. But a source at one of the other major music companies says similar breach of contract and failure to make payments, including millions and millions in past due royalties, was behind Triller's decision to pull catalogs. So they're working with certain big music groups, and they can't use their music anymore because apparently they weren't paying these companies on time. So whenever, you know, John is a business person, right? Whenever you start seeing a company getting behinds on the accounts payable, you know, that's never a good, never a good thing.
No, definitely not. But it's interesting to note that, you know, the Fight TV, the Thuzio, like what we kind of thought was generating the most money for Triller is really generating the most money for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, the without knowing it intimately, right, the music thing seems like an idea, a concept. And then you have those like high profile combat, like boxing, rap battles and whatever. And that seems to be a cost, but not a money generator. So the on the ground, right, like Mike Weber and his team at Fight and whoever's running Thuzio, those seem to be the things that are drawing the money. And interestingly, those were both acquisitions.
So what was the Flips Media side of things? What was that part?
So Flips Media was the original company that founded Fight. So before it was became Fight TV, it was called Flips. I think when Jeff Jarrett originally worked with them for New Japan, the New Year's show, it was called Flips Media. So that company, the original Fight, was bought by Triller.
And you were mentioning the music stuff. That is costing them a lot of money, right? I mean, there was past due royalties and things of that nature.
Yeah. So, you know, there's like a 200 page prospectus or something like that. I was just like keyword searching, but somebody could read. But like, you know, whenever you touch music, it gets expensive. Like we always hear about it. Like I even have a relative, he had a band that was like, sort of like, should we continue with this? Like to try for a full time or should we like, you know, go a more traditional route, and it ended up being the most money they ever made was like half a second clip in a Microsoft commercial that was used to sell a product.
Wow.
So like the cost of using like mainstream music, like in movies and that sort of thing, is so expensive. So I could just imagine the type of deals you'd have to work out. I've never downloaded their apps or anything like that, but like I'd imagine like to put their music in the background or have somebody dancing to their music, like trying to make a cool video, like to give somebody the rights to this, I'd imagine like starts getting real expensive.
I was talking to Jericho about a while ago when I was interviewing him, and he was saying they really wanted to use Back in Black, the AC/DC song, but it was so expensive. And I know Tony's bought other music before, but I guess that was so expensive, he wouldn't even go for it. So I know, obviously, when you're using some of that music, it get pretty, pretty damn expensive, even for Tony.
Yeah, especially when it's like ongoing, like, you know, with WWF at the time and SummerSlam, right? They had Highway to Hell, but like you knew it was going to be for a limited time. And then things come up like, and I don't even know, like on the network, if you watch that SummerSlam, like, do they have that like opening music? And probably not, right? Like otherwise that's like a whole nother cost involved. Yeah. Like when you're not producing your own music and you know, thankfully the industry has said people like, Jim Johnson and Jimmy Hart and so on producing music. And there's a guy now that's with AEW, of course. So like when you do it in house, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but there is a certain cachet to using, you know, that mainstream music, especially if you've licensed it. ECW did some interesting things apparently for years. Yep. And we still remember those videos, which are really cool, like Gangster's Paradise and so on. But like once you're on the radar and you have to pay for that music, like that cost adds up and you just have to figure out like, is that worth the trade-off?
Very true. So what is going on with Premier Streaming? What's the latest with them and Dustin Rhodes of all people?
Yeah, so like sort of like a nice media win for them at the Blizzard Brawl, which they hadn't announced it prior to this, that the show was taped. I remember the Blizzard Brawl airing actually on Twitch and like tuning in because it's a well-attended show every year in, I think, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And they had it that year, like Tommy Dreamer, you know, some people of prominence. They've had Braun Strowman before. I'm not sure who was on this card, but Dustin Rhodes announced at that show that 2023 would be his last year. And what came along with that in all the media coverage was that this show would air on Premier. So getting a little bit of a sense of the type of content that they'll have on here, not too sure of how it'll all shake out, but certainly getting a high-profile independent event where you have talents that might be contracted elsewhere to have it on your service, you know, isn't a bad way to go in the strategy.
So what's going on with AAA? They got some shoes coming out? What's going on?
Cubs fan had shared this announcement. It just shows the reach of like AAA once again in Mexico. These are Mexico exclusives that Panem, I'm not sure if that's a big shoe brand or not, but they announced that La Parca, Pentagon Jr., and Psycho Clown will have sneakers that'll be for sale in their stores and online, and they look pretty cool. I've long thought about getting some wrestling shoes just to have. I'm a little afraid that I'll like wear them out and then I'll think, why did I spend all this money for it? But these look pretty cool. Now, of course, the other higher profile thing is that show that took place in Tempe, Arizona, of course, with Cain Velasquez. So our friend Kevin Kleinrock was there, sharing pictures on his Facebook throughout the night. And then somebody affiliated did like a nice highlight video, and they did a really good job of, you know, capturing the excitement of the event and also like hiding a bit that, you know, it was such a big venue and apparently not too many tickets were sold. A rough estimate from WrestleTix was that there were just over 1,000 tickets distributed to the show. He didn't put out an actual like seat map number because like the logistics kept changing for the show. He put out sort of like how many tickets remained of the last logistical showing, which showed 1,700. But again, I'm still holding to feeling that there's just a few hundred tickets sold. I feel 400 or less, maybe 1,000 people in the building. Looking forward to getting some more, you know, official or other estimates from people as that comes out more.
What is going on with Warrior Wrestling? Because I know Vikino, obviously, from AAA is a part of that. So what's going on with Warrior Wrestling?
Yeah, so Warrior, we had talked about several months ago, a little bit of concern that like one of their stadium shows where, you know, in a high school, I think it's like a Catholic high school where they'd have like some high profile shows that worked really well during the pandemic because people were outside. But they seem to have, you know, regained momentum, and they found this venue, which pro wrestling promotions are starting to use more of. There's these e-arenas, you know, as gaming is becoming more of a spectator sport. There's these gaming-centric arenas or maybe theaters that are being reconstituted as gaming venues. So Warrior Wrestling has used this venue before. So Vikino is coming to South Bend. So again, talking about Kevin Kleinrock, the Mass Republic, and AAA sort of like booking him in different places. So we know that he'll be firstly, I mean, he was in Tempe, but then we know that there's Defy and GCW weekend. So I'm not sure if there'll be shows in between, but this is the next iteration of that. So Warrior Wrestling will be, you know, a promotion to keep, continue keeping an eye on because they're always up to interesting things.
Absolutely. So what is going on with GLOW? Some sad news.
Yeah, exactly. Some sad news. Ursula Bombay Hayden lost her battle with cancer. Many of the longtime Glow fans will remember her as Babe, the farmer's daughter. I certainly do, as like an 80s kid. She certainly glowed out of the screen without being too alliterative. Definitely well matched for that promotion. So first of all, condolences to her family on this news. Secondly, from a business perspective, and something that I'd like to look into later, apparently she is the one that held, I'm not sure if you define it as like trademarks, copyrights or something. I think she held some of that ownership in terms of that sort of thing for Glow. So I don't want to speak too much on that right now. If somebody had posted about that, I do want to look more into that, but just wanted to share the information as it was happened very recently around our taping tonight.
RIP to the farmer's daughter. So what about Impact in New Japan? I know BTZ, our buddy Brandon Thurston, he had the numbers for this one that didn't look too good.
Yeah, and just about this time, or maybe it's already come out by the time you listen, he's going to be another guest that's been a star on Vice TV. It's expected that he appears on the Vince McMahon long-awaited biography that they're doing. So congrats, Brandon. And I finally got to meet Brandon in person in New York as he was in town for the AEW weekend a few weeks ago. But we don't cover Impact in New Japan every week, the ratings on Access TV, just because it's so well covered by Brandon and others. But something to note was what looked like pretty low ratings to me for those weeks, recent weeks, 74,000 viewers for Impact, down 1% versus the median of the 4 weeks prior, and New Japan down to 58,000, although for them, this was an increase of 20% versus the median of the trailing 4 weeks per Brandon.
So what about MLW? What's the latest on them?
Yeah, so what's interesting, and this could be coincidental or not, probably coincidental, GCW books the Melrose Ballroom or vice versa, and MLW is going there too, not too far afield. So GCW again will be there in March, and MLW will be there on April 6th. So MLW, as we'll talk about in the next piece, a little bit of a struggle continuing at the gate. So interesting to see how they end up doing in the Melrose Ballroom in April.
So they're going to be at the ECW Arena again, but obviously Battleground Championship Wrestling is going to be there on 12/17 for the big ECW reunion show, the tribute to the Extreme. What is going on with that? Because it seems like the Battleground is doing better than MLW in Philly.
Yeah, Battleground continuing to reap from the ECW nostalgia, which is always fun. And this is, as they say in the newsletters or in Japan, super no vacancy. They say this event is sold out. No tickets will be sold at the door. So complete sellout on December 17th for, these shows. You have to do them, the right timing, not overdo them. Battleground seems to have found the right mix of like not overdoing it, but keeping things warm, right, as they've been around for a couple of years now. Whereas when you look at MLW in January, right, this has become their go-to taping venue, possibly where they're holding Fightland in February, waiting on the word for that. But it's a few weeks later, so they'd still have extra time to sell tickets. But when you look at the ticket map, there's still, maybe the first half, the first row is sold out. There's multiple seats there. There's some seats go on the second row and a little bit, as you go further down the line, but not many tickets move there. So a little bit of a challenge there. So maybe a balance in terms of the right venue for taping. But as we saw with Ring of Honor years ago, when they would even be more proactive in taping hours and hours of content to save money, which made sense at the 2300 Arena, the fan enthusiasm starts cooling off.
All right. I think that's it, right? That's the last, the big story. Battleground outdrawn MLW for now.
Yes, we're all covered, John.
Nice. So let's hit the plugs, Lavi. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And of course, Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Lavi, what do you got?
Follow me on Twitter, Lavi Marg, LaviMarg. You'll get an early heads up on some of the stories that we cover here. Check out my long-form articles on linecubjobsearch.com. And we've been hearing from so many listeners and different people and organizations how much they love the show, and this is their favorite show. So you, too, can support the show if you want to advertise, sponsor, or just say thank you through financial support of the show. It helps to keep us going in 2023. So you can send me an email, lavimarg, L-A-V-I-E-M-A-R-G, at gmail.com, or my DMs are open on Twitter.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. I'll see you right back here next week for a little business of the business. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.